Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Small Business Insurance Town Hall with Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara and the California Legislative Black Caucus. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would like to turn the conference over to our host, Assemblymember Shirley Weber. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to all of you. I know that it takes a lot when you spent the whole day working or doing the business that you're trying to run and the things that you're doing to then find time to get on a Zoom call or a conference call with others to talk about what you're doing. And yet we felt this was important enough that to interrupt your day at some point or to add to your day, that we would, as the California Legislative Black Caucus, to offer a session and a discussion on business and small business and the climate that we're in right now. I want to thank our commissioner, Ricardo Lara, who is our insurance commissioner, for offering his services to come and talk about small business insurance with regard to this telehealth town hall. And the Black Caucus is very, very pleased to host this event with him. The Black Caucus is over 50 years old, having been established in 1967 with a number of about four or five African-American legislative officials who took it upon themselves to get organized to not only represent their districts, but to make sure that the state was responsive to the needs of people of color, and particularly African-American. It is the oldest ethnic caucus we have in the nation, and as a result, we're very proud of the legacy and the history of the California Legislative Black Caucus. Many of the progressive issues in terms of housing and equal opportunity and welfare and support comes out of those members who have been members of the California Legislative Black Caucus. And the caucus continues to lead the way with regards to legislation dealing with the issue of many of the challenges that we face right now with regards to what is happening in our streets, what's happening with law enforcement, public safety, what's happening on our campuses with food insecurity and issues of housing. So we continue to lead in those areas that are very, very important to all of us. So I want to thank Ricardo Lara for basically hosting this event for us, for small businesses here in California. I have on the line with me, I'd like to introduce one of our members of the caucus, Ms. Sydney Kamlager, who's online and will give you an opportunity to say welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Weber, and thank you to everyone joining this evening's town hall. I want to echo your statements and give a shout out and a thanks to our insurance commissioner, Commissioner Lara, who has always been at the forefront of making sure that justice is part of conversations around insurance, around access to health care, and around how we keep our communities of color safe and protected through government. I also want to acknowledge our vice chair of the California Legislative Black Caucus, Steve Bradford. I actually am a member of the Assembly Committee on Insurance, and normally during the course of our legislative session, we would have hearings chalked to the brim to the gills with insurance-related legislation that we are considering. But because of COVID and the stay-at-home order, the Assembly Committee on Insurance will only actually be voting on four bills at our next and only hearing, bills that are pertinent to the crisis that we are living in. And so we have had a number of discussions on the impact that this has had on our communities, on access to insurance, and looking at legislative fixes that will need to happen both in the long term and in the moment as it relates to how to protect Black families, Black communities, and Black businesses. So I just want to thank everyone for putting this together and allowing us to share useful information and resources to constituents.
Thank you very much, Assemblymember Kamlager. I'm not sure if any other members of the caucus are on the line. If you are, please say so before we continue on. Okay, not hearing anyone else online. I know that everyone is in a lot of committees, and this is a really busy week in Sacramento. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to our vice chair of the California Legislative Black Caucus. Senator Stephen Bradford has over two decades of public service to California and to his local area. He was first a Gardena City Council member, Then he became a state assembly member, and now he is a state senator representing the area. He has given himself to become an unwavering citizen advocate for so many in the state and across the nation. He's known, obviously, for his groundbreaking legislation in the area of public safety and social justice, and we are always pleased to have him with us. He's very attuned to the issues of utilities and insurance and business, and does an excellent job in making sure that the caucus is responsive to the needs of the community in those particular areas, as well as any area that he serves. He is my vice chair, and which means that I have a strong shoulder to lean on, handling many issues for us and making sure that our caucus is a progressive caucus moving forward and representing the state of California. It gives me a great pleasure to turn the program over now to the vice chair, Stephen Bradford.
Thank you, Dr. Weber, and for your tremendous leadership. And I also want to recognize that of Assemblywoman Ms. Comlager for being on the call as well. And thank you again, Dr. Weber, as my former instructor at San Diego State, to help me get here today. I'm Steve Bradford, again, Senator from the 35th District down in Southern California. I'm also the vice chair, as Dr. Weber stated, of the Legislative Black Caucus, and I chair Senate Banking and the Financial Institutions Committee. I want to thank the Department of Insurance and my former legislative colleague, Commissioner Lara, for putting this town hall together. As we all know, this pandemic has had a devastating effect on small businesses throughout the state, and in particular, most of the those that are in disadvantaged communities. We know that this crisis has hit small businesses the hardest, especially those minority-owned, women-owned, disabled veteran-owned, or LGBT-owned businesses. There is still much work that needs to be done to ensure that our businesses do not close their doors forever. When the state legislature, especially the California Legislative Black Caucus, are continuing to work on policies that will protect our businesses and ensure that California's economic recovery is equity-focused. So we want to make sure there's fairness in all that we do. With that, I would like to introduce our first speaker, again, my former colleague in the legislature, my good friend, fellow Aztec, Commissioner Ricardo Lara. As a leader in the nation's largest state consumer protection agency, Commissioner Lara is charged with protecting California consumers. During the COVID-19 pandemic, he has been busier than ever before, and also during our wildfire issues as well. The commissioner has taken on many actions to protect consumers, workers, and businesses. While businesses have encountered problems in the past following wildfires and other disasters, we have seen nothing on this scale here in California and across the nation, with thousands of businesses either closed or dramatically reducing their payroll. So, Commissioner, here, Lara is here today to provide us with resources and answers to many of the questions that are being posed here today. Without further ado, Commissioner Lara.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Weber, Senator Comlager, and thank you to my good friend, Senator Bradford, and all the other members of the Legislative Black Caucus for joining us today as we, you know, bring some critical information to our Black-owned businesses throughout the state and our consumers. You know, part of my election in 2018 as insurance commissioner, I was fortunate to call all of you, my colleagues, serving alongside you in the legislature was truly one of the highlights. And since the pandemic started, I have joined more than 30 virtual town halls like these and reached over more than 7,000 businesses and consumers. You know, as we continue to reckon with generations of, you know, institutional racism and discrimination, you know, we're at a moment where we're witnessing our state and nation really reckon with a huge challenge, the reoccurring injustice of police brutality that has caused so much pain in the Black community for generations. For those of us that have been heartbroken about the senseless death of George Floyd and so many others, you know, it's time that we take some action and use this moment as a defining moment in our generation. And so I'm proud of the work you all are doing to get us to this point. And, you know, as angry as I am, with the continued violence against people of color through mass incarceration and discriminatory police abuse. I'm also inspired to see so many people speaking out for equality and protections under our laws, for fairness in our criminal justice system and economic justice. I know so many of you, and I was proud to work with you on all these issues. You know, I just have to say, during my last 2 years of the legislature, working with so many of you on our equity and justice package that I authored with Senator Mitchell, 10 bills that Governor Brown signed into law. Together, we passed Miranda rights protections for our youth and addressed disparities in sentencing in our black and brown communities. And today, I'm proud to announce the support of several legislative Black Caucus-sponsored legislation, including Dr. Weber's bill that will give voters an opportunity to repeal the ban on affirmative action. And Dr. Weber, I know I sent you a text that day. I can tell you I miss all of you. I don't miss the legislature and those insane schedules, but I can tell you when I was watching you all from afar on my computer, that was one of those days that I really missed being on that floor to really be part of that discussion. As a graduate of San Diego State who took full advantage of affirmative action, where, of course, our Dr. Weber taught for many years, I can tell you that the opportunity to go to California Public University was life-changing for me, as Senator Bradford was saying, as it was for him. And I believe it could only have happened, and it was only possible with affirmative action. And so I'm proud to support and stand with you, Dr. Weber, as we work on this important issue. I'm also supporting Dr. Weber's bill that will help set up a task force on reparations. Interesting note that you might not know, my department has been collecting historical data from insurance companies on slavery-era insurance policies that will help inform the task force their important discussions and recommendations regarding reparations. We've handed a lot of those old slavery-era insurance policy documents to our state librarian so they could be part of our history and it wouldn't be forgotten what the tragedies that were happening even here in California. So wanted to share that with you all as well. You know, one way the Department of Insurance is supporting our fellow Californians during this time is by ensuring accurate and timely information and services when it comes to the insurance needs of our community. Together, we all have a lot of work to do to assist businesses and their workers as they continue to try to cope with this pandemic and the future of our economy and the state. And making sure that our black businesses are part of that recovery is critical to the overall state economy and as we try to move forward. So I'm proud to be here today. I want to briefly talk about premium relief. Many of you have seen in the news that I ordered insurance companies to return premiums, a portion of the premium to consumers, essentially that have been paying for a product that no longer really reflects the rate of risk that they have been paying previous to the COVID pandemic. And so many of you have heard the private passenger automobile, but there's also other lines of insurance where our black businesses should be getting a reimbursement from their insurance companies. This includes commercial automobile policies, workers' compensation, commercial multi-peril, commercial liability, medical malpractice for those businesses that have their private practice and can't see the number of patients and are not doing the services because of the pandemic. And it also includes any other line of coverage where the risk has become substantially overstated as a result of the pandemic. I'm proud to say that to date, as a direct result of my directive, California automobile insurance companies have given back close to $1.2 billion to drivers. And the $1.2 billion includes more than $1 billion in premium relief for more than 18 million drivers for the first 3 months of the pandemic. An additional $180 million is in savings on future rate increases that were being planned that insurance companies reduced in response to my orders. Like I said earlier, my actions go farther than any other state by including our businesses to make sure that they're also being calculated in terms of their risk that has fallen as a result of the pandemic. If you want to know what relief your insurance company is providing you, albeit as a business owner, as a consumer, you can go to our website and see the report that they submitted to the insurance, to our insurance department at insurance.ca.gov. My department is currently reviewing all the reports we received from the insurance companies about how much premium they are returning for commercial policies. You know, I trust them, but I got to verify. So we are verifying that these amounts are sufficient and that are being another that they're appropriate for every consumer and business owner. As a business owner, you shouldn't have to do anything to receive the refund or the credit, and insurance companies must provide this relief as soon as possible. I expect these savings for the consumers will continue to grow as these stay-at-home orders continue. A few weeks ago, I extended my order for the premium relief to include the month of June and beyond, as long as the risk of accident and the loss remains lower due to the pandemic. So we encourage businesses to contact our department at 1-800-927-4357, or you can visit us on our website and shoot us an email that way at insurance.ca.gov. In addition to getting premium back to businesses, there are a few other major issues we are monitoring, including business interruption insurance. Look, we understand, and my department has received a number of complaints regarding claims for business interruption insurance related to the COVID-19 closures. Many businesses have looked to their insurance policies for possible coverage. As you know, each policy is a legal contract between the business owner and the insurance company. And since early March, we have seen dozens of lawsuits around the country, including here in California, which concern to the interpretation of these policies and whether these policies cover losses due to the pandemic. I can tell you we are monitoring these cases as they move through the courts. I don't have statutory authority to be able to open up these legal contracts between a business and the insurance company, but we are monitoring to see what the courts are going to ultimately decide. Meanwhile, you know, in addition, we've taken several steps to address another issue that we've seen around business interruption. We have been learning that some insurance companies are denying business interruption claims without even a thorough investigation, or even discouraging business owners from even filing a claim, and that is simply unacceptable. In response, I'm requiring insurance companies to comply with their contracts and California law by fairly investigating every business interruption claim caused by COVID-19, just as if it was, by the way, any other disaster, if it was a fire, a flood, or an earthquake. So my department will be watching to make sure they do everything by the book and that they're investigating every single claim. Rapidly just want to move to wildfires. The reality is, and you've already seen throughout the state, that wildfires are a statewide problem. And the fires that we have seen this year are a reminder that wildfire season is here, whether we're ready for it or not. So CAL FIRE and other agencies have responded to thousands of incidents already. Earlier this month, we had a town hall with CAL FIRE, the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and our consumer group, United Policyholders, to talk about preparation. And you can find that link and listen to that for those of our consumers and business owners that are living in wildfire areas throughout every county in California. You can listen to that at insurance.ca.gov. If we have another wildfire season with the damages and the destruction of homes and businesses, you know, my department will be there again to help everybody recover. For the 2017-2018 wildfires and the 2018 fire-related Montecito mudslides that you might recall, our dedicated staff from the department was able to recover more than $240 million for wildfire claimants. And we're also, thanks to, before I was an insurance commissioner, I served in the Senate, and passed legislation that gives protection against insurance non-renewals to everyone living in or near a perimeter of a declared wildfire emergency. Last year, we got to put that new law into effect for the first time. I'm proud to say that more than 1 million homes in 180 zip codes are now protected until December 2020 for non-renewal. You can find the list of those zip codes on our website at insurance.ca.gov. And, you know, we have another statewide declared disaster this year, and beyond, the new law will protect those from non-renewals for a year as they try to collect and gather, you know, their resources to be able to figure out if they're going to stay in the community, if they're going to rebuild, but at least give them the opportunity to still be covered and have their property be covered. I also just want to urge all businesses to be on the lookout for fraud and insurance scams. Unfortunately, during these times is when you see businesses being targeted for fraud, and we see that disproportionately business owners of color continue to be targeted. So if you see any red flags or business or any suspicious activity, please report it to the Department of Insurance. We have 300 sworn investigators and enforcement personnel with 9 regional offices across the state. And I would also like to tell businesses to be on alert for those offering bogus workers' compensation policies. You can verify the legitimacy of the selling agent and the policy being offered, and we can verify that within our department as well. You can give us a call at 1-800-927-4357. So, again, like many of you, our team is our office. Folks are working from home so that they can stay safe and continue to provide essential services to California consumers. We are available via phone and through our website. We know insurance can be complicated. You know, it's complicated for your insurance commissioner sometimes. But, you know, we are here to assist you. We know our business owners' primary concern is keeping the doors open and keeping employees and their customers safe. We can help guide you through the process. We have insurance experts ready to help you and answer your questions in multiple languages. And you can talk to an actual person, not just a recording. Thank you so much, Dr. Weber. I just wanted to give you this information and look forward to the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lara, for all that great information. And we thank you for standing online and being available for questions a little later in the program. Before I introduce our next speaker, I just want to recognize we've been joined by another California Legislative Black Caucus member, Assemblyman Reggie Jones Sawyer from Los Angeles, if you want to bring some quick, brief remarks, Assemblyman.
Very brief, because I got to get back to the Labor Committee. I just stepped out to make sure you knew how important this is, not only to my constituents, but just to African Americans in general. We don't really get involved in this, and we don't even know all the assets that the insurance commissioner can provide to our communities. And so this is vitally important, because when you don't know what you don't know, you can't really help your community. So I appreciate not only him extending this opportunity for us to talk to the insurance commissioner, but most important, for us to really form a partnership where we can provide more resources to our community that we probably have done a little bit of, but we can do much more. And I personally have had conversations with the senator, and every time I meet with him, he tells me something new that I can provide for my constituents. So, I want to thank him for connecting with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Joy Eubanks, who is the Central California Outreach Manager for Small Business Majority. Ms. Eubanks develops relationships with small business partners, small business owners, and community leaders to promote economic change and vitality in California. She has served as a small business expert in Central Valley for 15 years, working with small business owners from startups to expansion and liquidation. Her extensive background in small business technical assistance allows her to comprehend the complex needs of small business community. She is well-versed in these issues, and we thank her for her participation today and delighted to have her on the show. Ms. Eubanks, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you so very much, and good evening to everyone. And thank you, Legislative Black Caucus and Commissioner Lara, for hosting this wonderful telehall tonight to support small businesses and the community and connecting them to the resources that they need in such a critical moment right now. And again, another thank you to Commissioner Lara, to you and your team, for all the work you're doing to support California's micro and small businesses. As mentioned, I'm the Central California Outreach Manager for Small Business Majority, a national nonprofit organization focused on research, advocacy, and education on a whole host of different issues to really support the connection between small businesses and policymakers in ensuring the pragmatic policy solutions are passed to support the small business ecosystem and ensure an equitable economy that is inclusive and diverse. With that being said, as you can imagine, our organization has been doing quite a bit of pivoting work ourselves in rapidly responding to the needs of small business owners, which primarily have been around accessing capital. But we're starting to see a rise on legal issues, accessing business development, technical assistance, and a whole host of other priorities. Since March, our organization has held a series of webinars in partnership with the Small Business Development Centers, Chambers of Commerce, economic development agencies, and other business serving organizations, as we are here to be a resource for business owners that are looking to navigate the space of resources that exist. So I'm going to be covering a lot in the next few minutes, nine or 10 minutes or so. As we mentioned, we will be providing the links to all of these resources. We greatly appreciate the Small Business Administration and Small Business Development Center's partners. They are a critical resource to the small business community. At the same time, we are finding serious gaps in funding through recently released federal data. Serious questions about whether PPP funds were equitably distributed to minority-owned businesses and if the program served the smallest businesses as well. Reports have shown that while PPP was intended to be a lifeline for small businesses, not enough of it has made it to the Latino and Black-owned businesses. The data also show that some funds went to high-profile and well-heeled companies who took advantage of a stimulus program intended to save Main Street. 75% of all PPP funds went to the top 15% of borrowers. Additionally, we tallied up the smallest loans made and found that over 21,000 businesses, many with multiple employees, nationwide received less than $1,000. Of those businesses, 1,200 received loans of less than $100, with some as low as a single dollar. In California, a little over 2,500 businesses received loans under $1,000, and at least 290 businesses received loans of less than $100,000, in stark contrast to the 87,000 businesses receiving loans over $150,000. We know accessing capital has been a challenge for some time. A 2016 Federal Reserve survey found that Black and Latino-owned businesses and very small businesses were roughly half as likely to receive financing through banks compared to with their white-owned small firms and those with larger revenue. For some minority small business owners, PPP was the first time they had ever sought a bank loan to support their enterprises. The Center for Responsible Lending estimated that small businesses without employees, which accounted for about 95% of Black-owned firms, and 91% of Latino-owned firms were the most likely to face challenges accessing PPP funds in the initial round. Earlier this month, we released our own survey, and some of the feedback we received echoed much of the SBA data. But also, underfunding has been a pervasive problem for the smallest business owners. Many small business owners are not receiving the full amount of the PPP request. Often borrowers have not provided a reason for why they're underfunded. But anecdotally, we have heard that some lenders have been unwilling to correct errors on applications and borrowers being told to accept less than what they would be approved for to move the process along more quickly. In sum, because PPP is being executed through 5,000-plus lenders, there's not one universal standard that small businesses are experiencing. Another recent survey of our full network revealed that nearly a quarter, 23%, of small businesses who apply for PPP did not receive the full amount they requested. Of those who were underfunded, 69% say they are struggling with their rent or mortgage obligations. Our survey also found that 37% of all respondents report they are very likely to lay off staff once their PPP funding runs dry, which results in financial hardship that will last for decades to come. The same survey found that Black entrepreneurs were less likely to obtain a PPP loan than our broader network, with only 49% receiving a loan compared to 68% of the entire network. Black entrepreneurs were more likely to be underfunded by PPP compared to all respondents, 34% versus 23% respectively. In terms of maintaining staff, 44% say of Black entrepreneurs are likely, very likely, to lay off their workers once their PPP funds run out. Black entrepreneurs were less likely to have received PPP, 49%, and more likely to struggle with rent and mortgage payments, 69%, than their white counterparts among white business owners. 76% received a PPP loan, and 48% are struggling with rent and mortgage obligations. This represents over a 20 percentage point difference between the two populations. Now, with all that being said, the current conversation is going on with the HEALS Act. While we don't know all that will be included, but we do have a good sense that the automatic forgiveness of PPP loans under 150K, added categories for forgiveness, and the potential to apply for a second PPP loan are being heavily considered. So all of that kind of, you know, there's some opportunity there and some, you know, silver lining perhaps. I know I've given a ton of info, and these updates along with other resources are available on our website, www.venturize.org. And with that, I will turn it back over to Senator Bassett.
Thank you, Ms. Eubanks. Appreciate all the good information. We're going to ask you to stand by for additional questions once we get to that segment. Next up, we have Victor Parker. I want to thank Mr. Parker for joining us here today. He's our final speaker who serves as Deputy Associate Administrator for the Office of Field Operations and District Director for the Los Angeles Field Office for the United States Small Business Association. Prior to joining SBA, Mr. Parker worked in various capacities as a small business manager and corporate executive for nearly 20 years. He has experience with SBA programs from the small business side, government contracting, and the A8 certification process in particular. In addition to his broad management and leadership experience in the private sector, he is actively engaged in serving several civic, nonprofit, and community-based organizations throughout Southern California area. Mr. Parker, thank you for joining us, and you may begin.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Senator Bradford, for that kind introduction. And I especially want to thank the California Legislative Black Caucus and Commissioner Lara for having this teletown hall this evening. It's truly an honor to be on the call with all of you. As we all know, the COVID-19 pandemic has had a tremendous impact on small businesses throughout the state of California, particularly in our underserved communities. A lot of that is based on the fact that so many of our business owners in our underserved communities are self-employed. They are in service industries, and those industries that have been heavily impacted by the various safer at home orders that we've had throughout the state over the course of the last several months. And so what I wanted to do this evening briefly before we get to questions is really to kind of give everyone kind of an update on the various programs that the SBA is continuing to offer during this time frame, give you some updates on what those deadlines look like, as well as talk about additional resources that we have available here within the state so that your businesses can, again, begin to move into the recovery mode, if you will, of the pandemic and continue to have some sense of a lifeline as we move forward through this process. So as everyone has been talking about and my previous colleague speaker, Joy referenced, the Paycheck Protection Program is still available. Those applications are still being accepted from participating lenders. That deadline has been extended to August 8th, so it is absolutely critical that those businesses that are still seeking the Paycheck Protection Program get those applications in as soon as possible. One of the things that I want to flag for everybody as it relates to the August 8th deadline is that is the deadline for the lenders to get the application to SBA. So we really want to make sure that our small business constituents are getting in to meet with those lenders and getting those applications submitted this week. So by August 4th or August 5th, those applications will be on their way to SBA. We don't want our small businesses to actually meet with a lender on August 8th because it will be very difficult for those lenders to get everything done on their side and get it to SBA before that August 8th deadline. Just a few key points I want to remind folks as it relates to the Paycheck Protection Program. It is a fully forgivable loan in the event that the small business uses it for payroll costs, interest in mortgages, rent, and utilities. The payroll expenditure has been dropped from 75% and is now 60%. And so Treasury and SBA have worked together to provide that partial forgiveness also if folks are under that 60% threshold. So we want to make sure that borrowers are documenting how they're using those funds and showing a good faith effort to bring their employees back when it comes to the 60% for their payroll costs. We recognize that based on various safety requirements per OSHA and CDC guidelines that employers may not be able to bring back their employees, or they may not be able to reopen their business. And so, as long as we have that documentation, we are working with various borrowers to make sure that if they are under that 60% threshold, we will make sure that as much of that loan as possible is still forgivable. The unforgivable portion, the interest rate is at 1%, and the loan payments will be deferred for 6 months. The other important factor is there's no collateral or personal guarantees required for the Paycheck Protection Program, and that neither the government nor any of the lenders will be charging small businesses any fees for the Paycheck Protection Program. As we're continuing to work to get these loans out to all of our small businesses, California is still leading the nation in terms of the total number of PPP programs, with nearly 600,000 loans across the state have been funded so far, worth well over $67 billion. And so nationwide, we are leading the nation again in terms of our Paycheck Protection Program loans. The other loan program that you've heard about and that we are still offering is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, commonly referred to as the EIDL loan. Again, that is another loan program that is done directly through the SBA. You do not have to go to a participating lender. Small businesses may apply on the SBA website through the EIDL loan portal. And those loans, again, are designed to provide economic relief for our businesses that are currently experiencing a loss in revenue. So EIDL proceeds can be used to cover a wide array of working capital and normal operating expenses such as healthcare benefits, rent, utilities, any of their fixed debt payments. They can continue to use those EIDL funds for. The deadline to apply for the EIDL program is December 16th. Again, that's December 16th, so there is still time to apply for that loan as well. And once again, California is leading the nation in terms of the total number of loans and the dollar volume of the loans in the EIDL program. As of July 15th, we had done approximately 400,000 EIDL loans had been approved at a value of almost $27.5 billion. So again, there's funding out there. There's opportunities out there. It's just a matter of making sure that our small businesses are made aware and that small businesses do not disqualify themselves. Far too often what I'm hearing in the community is there's an assumption that because they may be paid based on 1099s or because they are self-employed, that they are not eligible for these loan programs, and that could not be further from the truth. So as much as we possibly can, please continue to encourage your small businesses to apply. Your small business constituents. Within California, there are 6 SBA district offices, starting with Sacramento, San Francisco, Fresno, Los Angeles, Orange County, Inland Empire, and then the San Diego district office. So any of those district offices can help our small businesses throughout the various communities to connect with these programs and move forward. The other two loan programs I want to touch on really quickly that people may not be aware of, there was also a separate disaster declaration for the civil unrest. So there is a separate loan program that is available to California businesses and residents in Kern County, Los Angeles County, Orange County, San Bernardino, and Ventura that have been impacted by the civil unrest that began on May 26. So in response to the coronavirus pandemic and for the disaster, SBA did establish a virtual disaster loan outreach center for the civil unrest disaster declaration. And so businesses that have been impacted that potentially would be interested can certainly reach out to our virtual disaster loan outreach center Monday through Friday. We'll make sure that it gets posted. There's a phone number that they can call up in Sacramento, 916-735-1500. Again, these services are only available for the California disaster declaration as a result of the civil unrest, so make sure that they specify that when they're having those conversations. The deadline to apply for that particular loan program of the civil unrest is August 17th, and the deadline to apply for the economic injury disaster loan is March 17th. So again, for the property damage, the deadline is on August 17th. And if it's for economic injury associated with the civil unrest, it is March 27th. So businesses of all sizes, private and nonprofit organizations would be able to borrow up to $2 million for that particular program. The last program that I want to mention really quickly is the Community Advantage Recovery Loan Pilot Program. So this is a new program that actually just launched this week. It is a loan program that is designed to provide funds for small businesses that need assistance in helping to pivot, do things that they need to do to upgrade or modify their businesses, whether it's structurally, whether it's adding software to be able to work offline, or whether it is a restaurant that needs to build something outside in a parking lot so they can operate outdoors. Those types of retooling for their businesses, for their business models in response to the COVID-19 pandemic can begin to apply for these loans. These loans are done primarily through approved community advantage lenders. There are various community advantage lenders throughout the state of California that can assist with this loan program. Again, those district offices that I referenced before will be able to provide you with the specific community advantage lender that's nearest your particular constituents or near your business so that you may apply for this loan as well. These loans, again, could be submitted as early as July 22nd when we launch the program, and loans can be approved through September 27th as long as those funds are dispersed no later than October 1st. Want to encourage folks, all of our small business development centers, which Joy Eubanks just referenced, are fully operational. They're virtually operational, and they are really the resource for our small businesses to access all of these loan programs in terms of helping them package those their loan packages and providing them with the essential guidance to figure out which loan program is best for them. With that, I will turn it back over to you, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Parker, and I want to thank all of our guests for that great information. Now we're moving on to the fun part, our lightning round. We're going to get to the question and answers. Thanks, everyone, for submitting your questions. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can today. But for whatever reason, we're not able to answer all those questions during the town hall. Please know that your questions will be answered directly from the relevant organizations. It's good. We're running a little ahead of time, so we probably might be able to get all these in. The town hall is also being recorded, and we'll make the recording available on our Legislative Black Caucus website as well as the Department of Insurance website. And a summary of notes of the town hall with contact and resource information will also be available. So we're moving to the first question, and it's for our insurance commissioner, Insurance Commissioner Lotta. The first question is, states, I paid my insurance and understand it includes business interruption coverage. Why isn't loss of business due to COVID-19 pandemic covered?
Great question. The first thing people need to know is that not all policies are the same, of course. We would need to look at the specific policy to better understand what coverages and exclusions a policy has. So if a business has business interruption coverage, but their insurance company is telling them that these losses are not covered due to the exclusions in their policy, we recommend that you file a formal claim with their insurance company to start creating that important paper trail. Insurance companies are legally required to fairly investigate a claim and formally respond back with their coverage decision and the reason for any denial that they may make. While it is, you know, a little more complicated than this, many commercial policies have exclusions due to the loss of contamination by virus or similar perils. We've been seeing this happening since H1N1, the swine flu, and a whole host of other viruses that we've experienced. Many policies also require that a loss be caused by direct physical damage or loss to the insured property that results from a cause covered by the policy. So these conditions and exclusions do create hurdles in obtaining the coverage, and that's what we've been hearing from a lot of business owners throughout the state. However, we need to see the entire policy as well as the circumstances applicable to the loss to know what conditions or exclusions may or may not exist in particular. We have been working with several businesses and have been successful in some of these claims and been able to gotten some of these business interruption claims paid. So I would just say if a business has not filed a formal claim yet, I encourage them that they should do so immediately. If the business has filed a formal complaint and that claim has been denied, we recommend you file a request for assistance. That's what we call it's our term in the department, by calling us at 1-800-927-4357, or you can file the request for assistance through our website at insurance.ca.gov so that one of our insurance experts can look at your case, look with a fine-tooth comb at that letter you received from the insurance company so that we can see what other opportunities you might have to be able to obtain some of your coverage for your business. So don't hesitate to give us a call or shoot us an email, and we'll look through your policy. Thank you.
Thank you for that answer. Before we move to our second question, being the fact that we're running a little ahead of time, I'm being notified that our esteemed budget chair from the Senate has joined us, Senator Holly Mitchew, who is considered by many the conscience of the legislature. Senator Mitchew, would you like to bring remarks?
Senator Bradford, thank you so much. And I just want to congratulate and acknowledge our former colleague, the insurance commissioner, for all of his real innovation and aggressive actions on behalf of consumers. So on behalf of all our shared constituents, Commissioner, we thank you. I'd like to thank the other panelists. I'm glad that the Black Caucus was able to partner with the Insurance Commission and others to bring this really critical information to our communities, communities of color, underrepresented communities. Oftentimes, we're the last to get this information, so I'm proud to be a member of a caucus that works every day on your behalf. Thank you, Vice Chair, Ms. Bradford.
Thank you, Senator Mitchell, for all that you do on a daily basis. Second question, it's for Ms. Eubanks. It states the Governor Newsom announced assistance for small businesses and workers displaced by COVID-19. What resources are available at the state level?
Thank you. That's a great question. Newsom introduced a one-year reprieve that will allow small businesses to keep upward of $50,000 in money they would otherwise owe the state in sales tax. In essence, it's a bridge loan. The money that you've already collected, you will not have to pay the state for 12 months. So no penalties, no interest, it's a de facto, a loan. The governor initially allocated $50 million to iBank, our infrastructure bank, and the Small Business Disaster Relief Loan Guarantee Program to create micro-lending opportunities that otherwise would not be eligible for SBA relief. And the state loan guarantee program currently has over $120 million in it. So there's another one. 90-day extension for business tax filing. A return for less than $1 million in taxes, you have a 90-day extension for that to file those taxes. And on April the 28th, the state rolled out a new program to help unemployed or partially unemployed Californians who are business owners, self-employed, independent contractors, and others who are financially impacted by the pandemic. It's the federally funded program called the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, or PUA. PUA benefits are available if you don't qualify for regular UI benefits in California or another state, and also don't qualify for state disability insurance or paid family leave benefits. PUA benefits will be issued within 24 to 48 hours, so that's a huge difference than the traditional 21 days for the regular claims. The governor also announced a public-private partnership through Onward.org, which helps California find job opportunities across the state. So there's quite a bit of things on there. And again, all these are listed on our VentureEyes.com website.
Thank you very much. We're back to Commissioner Lara. Can workers' comp insurance companies exclude COVID-19 from their coverage, whether or not they are considered essential businesses? Commissioner Lara?
Sorry, hello? I forgot to unmute.
Oh, okay.
you would think I would have this down by now. Great question. Workers' compensation insurance companies cannot exclude COVID-19 from their coverage. All workers affected by COVID-19 on the job are eligible for workers' compensation benefits, whether or not they consider themselves essential services, by the way. So this includes workers engaged in frontline occupations, such as healthcare, emergency services, food production, sales, delivery, among others. Workers' compensation also applies to our undocumented workers in California. In 2015, when I was in the Senate, I authored SB 623, which was signed by then-Governor Brown, that expanded protections for our immigrant workers in the event they were injured on the job, even if their employer doesn't carry workers' compensation insurance as required by law, as we've seen in some cases. I issued a notice to insurance companies on April 6th to remind insurance companies about, again, workers' compensation and the existing legal protections for all of California workers. Governor Newsom signed an executive order, as you might recall, creating a presumption that a worker contracted COVID-19 while on the job if the worker is diagnosed with COVID-19 or test positive within 14 days of performing labor or a service to at a service at a place of work. The order really applies to all workers, whether or not they're deemed essential. But I have to say, for business owners, this is a rebuttable presumption. And what a rebuttable presumption means that, meaning that employers will have a chance to prove that the illness was not work-related. So it's not like it's an end-all, be-all. The businesses will still have an opportunity to be able to prove that the illness was not work-related. And honestly, as people ask me, too, about what is going to be the impact of COVID-19 on our workers' compensation system and on premiums that businesses pay, businesses that are closed or have drastically reduced payrolls due to the stay-at-home orders may see their workers' compensation insurance costs reduced in the short term, and that is why I ordered the insurance companies to return a portion of workers' compensation premiums to our business owners. I also issued emergency workers' comp regulations to make changes to reflect that lower risk for worker injuries in light of the pandemic. Excuse me. And these new regulations will mandate insurance companies to recompute their premium charges for policyholders to reflect the reduced risk of loss consistent with my bulletins, and will result in a savings for many policyholders and business owners. Under these emergency regulations, employers are permitted to reclassify an employee if the employee's duties have changed from, let's say, a clerical classification reflecting that employer's lower risk of injury when compared to an employee's previous classification. So these classifications will reduce the employer's premiums for employees who are a lower risk because they are now working, let's say, from home, or even though they, may previously have not done so. So it gives some flexibility to our business owners to reclassify employees that have been at home. And this change would be retroactive to March 19th. And the first day that's the first day of the governor's stay-at-home order, and will conclude 60 days after the governor lifts the stay-at-home order. These emergency regulations will also, I think, lower premiums for some employers by excluding from premium calculations the payments made to an employee, including sick or family leave, while the employee is not performing duties of any kind for the employer as well. And typically these payments will be used as a basis for the employer's workers' compensation premium. This change will lower the employer's rate by reducing the amount of payroll addressed, and the employer will not pay that premium for paid workers who otherwise are being furloughed, for example. This new regulation also excludes claims related to COVID-19 diagnosis from being included in future rate calculations, so that employers are not penalized with higher rates due to COVID-19 claims. We felt that was really important. And also, I've also adopted rules that will permit my statistical agent to collect COVID-19 related claims data so that I can continue to monitor the overall effect of this pandemic on workers' compensation market. So although there's a lot of volatility, the actions I've taken have really been to allow businesses to recalculate the job descriptions of their employees and give them the reimbursements on their workers' comp so that they can at least have some money back during these difficult times as they're trying to stay afloat. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Mr. Parker. It is understood that of the $350 billion through the Small Business Rescue Package, they have reached their limit with that money. The question is, can one still apply for loans through your lender or at SBA.gov?
Thank you, Senator Bradford. No, that's a good question because we have had a lot of fluctuation in terms of deadlines and with the different programs. So the short answer is absolutely yes. You certainly can still apply for all the programs, and particularly the Paycheck Protection Program, as well as the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. As I stated earlier, the Paycheck Protection Program deadline is August 8th, so we do want to make sure that folks are moving quickly. One of the things that I would recommend is to make sure that if you have, you know, any concerns about the lender that you are working with the Paycheck Protection Program, to please reach out to your respective district office just to verify that you are not being reeled in by predatory lenders. Predatory lenders tend to, for lack of a better term, stalk our community more than others, and a lot of our folks fall victim to that. And so we want to make sure we're protecting folks as much as we possibly can from that. So if you are getting inquiries from a particular lender that you're not familiar with, or from an institution that doesn't quite sound right, if they're talking about charging you money in order to find you a lender for Paycheck Protection Program, for example, that is absolutely a red flag, and I want to make sure that you contact your district office. We can look in the computer system and verify, you know, that particular lender is an authorized Paycheck Protection Program lender.
Great. Okay. Commissioner Lara, you're back up to bat. With the current unrest throughout neighboring communities, businesses want to know if damage to their business property and inventory by riots and looting is covered by their insurance.
Great question. Again, all standard commercial policies typically include coverage for damage to the insured premises and other business properties resulting from the civil unrest. Whether a specific loss will be covered depends on the actual language in the policy and any coverage exclusions that might apply, but it's important to check for these specific insurance policies for the following coverages. I would look for vandalism and malicious mischief. These are coverage that both include willful destruction of property and are closely related. Also, riot and civil commotion. These both involve a revolt by a group of people in a public space, or a civil commotion, is similar to a riot but involves a greater number of people. Insurance policies often list these together. Business income coverage. This covers your loss for businesses of income when you have to suspend operations, like we've seen all around the country, and typically is triggered by a direct physical loss from a covered peril in your policy, such as a fire. Civil authority coverage, business income coverage, will typically include civil authority coverage, which protects your loss of income if a civil authority prohibits access to your business, such as a local government order or a curfew. Businesses that have this coverage are forced to limit their hours or suspend operations during civil unrest may be covered after an initial period, so that's an important to look out for civil authority coverage. Also, many commercial policies cover glass breakage, but we have seen companies requiring separate glass coverage to be added to a policy for an additional premium. So we got to look out for what type of glass coverage you have in your commercial policy. I also just want to mention two other coverages auto coverage, damage to a personal vehicle because of civil unrest is covered under your comprehensive portion of your policy. This is optional, separate from liability coverage that is required under California law, but you should really look if your own vehicle was damaged during civil unrest. Homeowners and renters coverage is also important. A standard homeowners and renters policy will cover all perils I mentioned. And if you are on the FAIR plan, which is the insurer of last resort, these coverages are optional, so you need to verify that you purchased them. So if you're wondering whether to file a claim, or I urge you to contact the agent or company who sold you the policy, you should face no consequences in inquiring about a claim, by the way. So I want to make sure that you understand that you will face no consequences in your premium for inquiring about the claim, such as losing, you know, or losing a claims-free discount, for example. You need to make that decision that is best for you. So if you are not satisfied with the answers you're getting from your insurance company, give us a call again at 1-800-927-4357 or through our website at insurance.ca.gov. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is for Ms. Eubanks. The individual states, I'm struggling to find grant opportunities. By the time I hear about the program, they are gone. Where can I go for information?
Absolutely, relative question. Again, like I said, we're the last people to hear about all of the programs and things that are out there. So Small Business Majority, actually, we are compiling relevant tips and resources and information on new funding opportunities and policy development that we are sharing on our website, venturerise.org, and through online presentations. We post daily updates to this page with useful information about the way small businesses can prepare for the impact of COVID-19 on their business and community. And if you're in the LA area, I would like to share that the City of Los Angeles and other partners have collaborated with LISC, LISC LA, to distribute grants totaling $13 million through six rounds. The next round is expected to open August 3rd, 2020. If you're in the Oakland, San Francisco, or LA region, TMC Financing also has a grant program available, and the eligibility is flexible. So I would, you know, go to those prospective places, but our website, venturerise.org, has a lot of updates and always has the most up-to-date information on any of your grants and programs that are regionally specific.
Thank you. Mr. Parker, question states, we have tried to find a lender that will work with us. However, they all say it is too risky at this time. Do you have a list of lenders that are willing to work with small businesses during this pandemic?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So it's an evolving list. So what basically we have on the SBA website, there is a list of all the approved Paycheck Protection Program lenders that folks can use. However, to mitigate what I refer to as lender fatigue, where you're going to a lender and only to find out that they are either no longer participating in the program or you're not a current customer, any of those challenges, you can contact your respective local district office, and we are actively maintaining a list of those folks that are still accepting applications. One of the things that we did a much better job from an SBA perspective on the second round was we opened up the loan programs and in order a chance to be a PPP lender, even if you were not a traditional SBA lender. So now we have CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions, we have credit unions, we have a variety of non-traditional banks that are approved to do the PPP program. And quite frankly, we've seen since we brought those folks on board that the average loan size and the number of minority-owned businesses have certainly gone up, and we hope that will continue to happen through next week through this round of funding as well. So we want to make sure that you contact, again, those district offices so we can plug you in directly to those CDFIs and to those institutions that are really mission-based lenders that are looking to help the community, that are authorized to do SBA loans, so that we can make sure that folks, again, are not caught into those predatory lenders that I referenced earlier. And you can also reach out to local small business development center or a women's business center or even a veterans business outreach center and even our SCORE chapters in order to help you find lenders to make sure that you are, again, finding a legitimate lender and a lender that is still currently in the program. So if you do go to a lender and they say that they're no longer participating in the program or there's no funds available, that does not mean there's not an appropriation available. Many of the lending institutions have reached their own individual cap and are no longer participating in the program because of the number of loans they've already done. But there are still active lenders out there. As of last count, we had about $130 billion left in the PPP program. So there is certainly an opportunity and funding available and active lenders that are out there throughout the state of California.
Thank you. Commissioner Latta. We have received a lot of questions from small business owners about liability due to COVID-19 exposure. How can businesses deal with these liability issues?
Yeah, you know, we've held 30 town halls, and I'm extremely sympathetic to our businesses that keep getting different answers and you know, these different orders at the different levels of government. You know, even when you reopen, businesses are gonna need time to recover, and I know liability due to COVID exposure is a serious and legitimate concern. The department is going to be watching closely to make sure that insurance companies are giving you as much flexibility as possible and that they are fully abiding by their contracts. So, you know, I understand the burdens being placed on businesses as they attempt to reopen while keeping their employees and their customers safe. It is not an understatement to say that, you know, lives are at stake here. Businesses should follow the governor's resiliency roadmap as well as local guidelines for what processes the business must follow. I think that will go a long way towards helping California lead the way through this pandemic. As businesses reopen, they should have a conversation with their agent or insurance company to get guidance regarding how to safely return to business, and also make sure the business has the right coverage in place. We want to make sure they're not underinsured or they might have the wrong coverage. So if something were to happen, the business, you know, may not be protected. So again, this is the moment to have that discussion with your agent or insurance company to get some guidance. If you need any help or to talk to an expert from our department to help you decipher your coverage, or if you're not satisfied, again, with what your agent or company is telling you, give us a call. We can help work these details out with you. And as I discussed earlier, workers are specifically covered in their contract if they contract COVID-19 while on the job. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Eubanks. Next question states, I've received payroll protection program, but I am concerned about the forgiveness application and the process. How can I prepare myself that I can receive forgiveness as I'm afraid I'll be left with a lot of debt?
Yeah, that's an important one. So the rules surrounding the payroll protection program are complex, and the guidance is ever-changing. It could be something different tomorrow. To ensure that your PPP will be forgiven, follow the guidelines. But make sure you are tracking the use of funds. Tracking the use of funds, the use of the PPP loan proceeds is paramount to preparing for loan forgiveness. Some steps you may want to consider taking include, number one, just document. You cannot have enough paperwork on this one. Retaining documentation to support all payments made with PPP funds. Setting up separate account codes with your general ledger to track expenses paid with PPP funds. Setting up a separate bank account. Many attorneys are even recommending that businesses set up a separate bank account for PPP funds to help track expenditures. It should also be noted that there is a possibility that the next stimulus package will offer flexibility on PPP, possibly automatically forgiving loans of $150,000. Although the forgiveness application is available, many are recommending to not submit to your bank yet, and we may know many banks waiting for additional guidance from the Department of Treasury. Be diligent on how you use the funds and be absolutely certain that the purpose of the funds used qualify for debt forgiveness. work closely with your relationship banker. A good banker will know exactly what they qualified you for and make sure you use those funds for specific purposes. I cannot stress enough the importance to follow the guidelines. Those guidelines can be found on Venturize.org as well as the SBA website. Also, reach out to your local small business development center. They have consultants that are uniquely trained to understand and walk you completely through the application process, the forgiveness process, the entire thing. Reach out to your local small business development center.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Latta, a couple of months ago, you issued a bulletin requiring insurance companies to refund premiums. Will that be for the total monthly payment? And when will I get that? And I personally want to know because I've had to pay my full premium since you've issued that notice.
Senator Bradford, then you got to give me a call and let me know who your provider is.
I planned on doing it. I will.
I'll make sure. You know, I ordered the premium refunds because, again, for many people, the risk of accident or loss is much lower due to the statewide stay-at-home order. So we are seeing fewer accidents or injuries on the road, falling business payrolls and receipts from our business community, reductions in liability exposure due to temporary closures, and premium reductions and refunds should absolutely reflect that. The risk has not gone away completely, but my department will be watching again to make sure that the amount the insurance companies are returning is adequate, and that they are not shortchanging our businesses and our consumers. The amount people get back will vary depending on the company and policy you might have. In many cases, it's going to be a credit, a reduction, or a refund. You know, it's going to be a percentage of the premium. This will not be a 100% refund of the premium. The reductions will be tied to the change in the risk during the month. Californians are subject to the stay-at-home order, as I mentioned. And we've already seen, again, a number of insurance companies announce premium refunds, reductions, and credits. My bulletin directed all insurance companies to make an initial premium refund to all adversely impacted California policyholders as soon as possible, but no later than 120 days from the date of my bulletin, which would be August 11th. So recognizing the unique nature of each insurer's policy, book of business, and the insurance coverage offered, I directed each company to propose the best way for them to immediately return premium to policyholders. My department will, again, validate these rebates to make sure they're accurately reflected and reflect the reduced risk and not, you know, you're not being shortchanged, as I said. So persons who have not received a premium relief, like you, Senator Bradford, in spite of the reduction in covered risk under the policy, are strongly encouraged to contact your insurance company or else give us a call. I've also requested an extended grace period to pay premium. So if someone's having a trouble paying the premium, they should contact their insurance company and inquire about the grace period notice. A lot of our business owners, since they've seen a drop in income and with all the expenses and the closures and so forth. So many businesses are having trouble even just paying their premiums. So if you're a business owner that can't pay your premiums, give your company a call. They should give you a grace period and then allow you to phase in those payments. So again, if you're having any trouble with any of this, please give us a call at 1-800-927-4357. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Commissioner, we're down to our last two questions. We're a little tight on time, but I still want to ask them. This one's for Mr. Parker. Real quick, can you apply for multiple programs? Are small businesses eligible for various programs? If you have a quick answer to that.
Yes, the quick answer is absolutely. That's an excellent question. So you can certainly apply for both programs. You can apply for the Paycheck Protection Program, and you can apply for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. I want to reiterate, however, what Joy Eubanks just mentioned in her previous answer was, Document. The use of proceeds will become very critical in the event that you have been funded by both programs. The short answer and the simple rule is if you have the Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. Use all of your Paycheck Protection Program funds for your payroll, whether you're self-employed or whether you have employees. Focus all of that on payroll and use the Economic Injury Disaster Loan to navigate your rent and other fixed expenses. That's the short answer, but again, document, and please leverage the Small Business Development Centers to help you navigate when you get to that forgiveness portion so that you can make sure you have covered yourself and followed all the guidelines, because they are somewhat complicated and they are evolving on a regular basis. And so until those things settle down, please leverage those resources that Joy mentioned earlier.
Got it. Final questions for Commissioner Latta, and it's an issue that you champion in the legislature, and I've been honored to work with you since you became the commissioner. And can you speak to your office's efforts as it regards to supplier diversity in the insurance industry, specifically with minority-owned and women-owned and LGBT-owned businesses?
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Bradford, for your tremendous work in this issue. You know, since the COVID-19 crisis, it has been showing that all the gaps that exist in our economy and falling the hardest on our diverse business owners. That is why our supplier diversity initiative has been very important for the department. We have seen contracts between the insurance industry and California's diverse-owned businesses increase 93% over a five-year period. And let me tell you how much that is in actual dollars. That's going from $930 million to almost $2 billion. That includes women-owned businesses, veteran, disabled veteran-owned, minority-owned businesses, LGBT-owned businesses, as well as our diversity of insurance company corporate boards that you've also worked on. So I want to see those numbers go even higher. And the Department of Insurance Diversity Task Force is a group of amazing leaders who helped provide recommendations to the department on how we can better serve as a resource for our small businesses who need it the most. This year, I'm proud to have appointed the first Hmong American supplier diversity expert who has worked with underserved communities, including farmers and small businesses owners in the Central Valley, for example. In addition to the president-elect of the National Association of National Organization that represents the voice over 1.3 million women-owned business owners in California. And again, Senator Bradford, thank you for authoring SB 534. We now require that over 260 California insurance companies report out their supplier diversity efforts, thanks to your efforts, Senator Bradford. So for the first time in history, we also are now including LGBT businesses as part of the category that we track, and we want to know how much money is being spent on businesses that are owned by our Black community, our Latino community, LGBT, and other people of color. So we are committed to keep gaining ground on for our diverse community. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to thank all three of our speakers for those thorough answers and your overview of where we are as it relates to the insurance industry and what's happening with COVID-19 and this pandemic. I'm going to now afford you opportunity to bring forth closing remarks. I will start with our commissioner, then followed by Ms. Eubanks, and then Mr. Parker. Commissioner Latta.
Thank you again. I just want to thank you, Senator Bradford, Dr. Weber, and all the members of the Legislative Black Caucus. Thank you so much for co-hosting this important conversation. Again, like you said, you know, our communities of color always tend to be the last ones to get this information. And so I wanted to make sure that we reached out to our Black business owners throughout the state to make sure that they know they have a friend as the insurance commissioner and that they're fully available to them to answer any questions they might have. We want them to continue to be business owners and continue to contribute to the economy of our great state. Joy and Victor, thank you for joining us and sharing vital information for our businesses and consumers. The resources you shared are of critical importance. And to you, our fellow Californians, if you are facing any insurance-related issues, I want to remind you that the Department of Insurance is here to help. You can reach us again at our hotline at 1-800-927-4357 or at our website, insurance.ca.gov. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Eubanks.
Yes, I want to, again, thank you guys so much for having me on. Commissioner Laura, Legislative Black Caucus, thank you so much for the wonderful work you guys are doing. Again, I can only reiterate the importance of small business development centers and having that access to those centers. And by all means, if anyone has any questions or comments or concerns, feel free to reach out to me at jeubanks@smallbusinessmajority.org. That's my email address. And of course, visit us at venturize.org or smallbusinessmajority.com.
Thank you. And Mr. Parker.
Well, thank you again, Senator Bradford, Commissioner Laura, and, of course, the California Legislative Black Caucus for having this event. It is so important that our small businesses leverage the resources that are out there. You know, I want to just reiterate, you know, please don't disqualify yourself. So many of our businesses are thinking because they are self-employed or because they don't have a W-2 or they're only all their employees are paid by 1099, their contract employees, that they're not eligible for these programs. And that is not the truth, and we want to make sure that you have access to all these programs. So please take advantage of all the different resources, including our small business development centers, women's business centers, veteran business outreach centers, our SCORE mentors that are all SBA funded. And in fact, the SBDCs are also funded by the state of California as well. So these are services that are available free of charge to you. The Small Business Majority is also another great resource that we want you all to take advantage of. If you need to find a specific center that is near you or a specific district office, please go to sba.gov/local-assistance. You put in your zip code, and the district office as well as those resource centers will pop up on the screen, and you'll be able to find it. Also, feel free to reach out directly to my office. We have a mailbox that we are monitoring 24/7. That's LADO, L-A-D-O, which stands for Los Angeles District Office, at sba.gov, and I will be able to make sure that we direct the right resources to you to help you move forward and get you through this COVID-19 pandemic. Again, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Latta, again, Ms. Eubanks, and Mr. Parker for your amazing participation here and all the wonderful information that you brought forth. On behalf of Dr. Weber and the California Legislative Black Caucus and the Department of Insurance, we want to thank all of you, especially our small businesses that have participated in this teletown hall on this important issue. We also want to recognize our two amazing caucus consultants who helped work with the Department of Insurance to make this possible, Ms. Jackson as well as Ms. Stevens. And again, on behalf of Dr. Weber and the Legislative Black Caucus, Assemblywoman Comlager, Assemblymember Reggie Jones Sawyer, and our Senate Budget Chair, Holly Mitchell, we want to thank you all today for your participation. And that concludes our teletown hall. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this conference will be available for replay after 7 p.m. today through August 6, 2020. You may access the AT&T replay system at any time by dialing 1-866-207-1041 and entering the access code 901-9497. International participants dial 402-970-0847. Those numbers again are 1-866-207-1041 and 402-970-0847, access code 901-9497. This concludes our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.